Hello, Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along with us today on this second day of January. We have advice for personal computer users today from Peter Green of InfoStar, our Madison personal computer consultant. Peter, it's a great to see you here in studio again.
Always great, Jim, and looking forward to starting off the new year right.
I noticed that, couldn't help but notice that Microsoft Windows Vista is finally being released this month. And as far as security goes, what are your concerns about whether or not Windows users are still vulnerable?
Probably not to be the first one. when Windows released XP a long time ago, there were a lot of claims to being the world's most secure operating system in the world, and you know we know what history has shown us in terms of breaches, holes, flaws in their plan.
Mm-hmm.
You would think that okay, a lot of time has passed, they've done a lot of things, but it's such a wide-reaching operating system with so many hooks into it that to have every base covered, I just don't see it. There's improvements going on in hardware, improvements in the software, performance features, and so forth. Sometimes it's not always the performance that you want the improvement in. It's the features, the things that you can do
mm-hmm.
versus what you can't do. You'd like to see a better email solution in terms of dealing with spam filters, spyware, anti-phishing, those things. And they're coming out, and they're working on it. But, in the near future, I don't really see like it's really stopped. You know, the floodgates have stopped coming my way.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of looking at the new operating system and whether or not, someone should upgrade from an older platform to a new platform, I've talked about this before. If you've got problems with your operating system, upgrading is not the solution. You've got to fix the problems with the operating system before you do the upgrade. Because if you have the problems and then you think the upgrade's going to fix it, it just makes it worse.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases, you can actually have a system where it won't work anymore because you've caused the crash to really occur to the point where the OS, the operating system, no longer works. So you don't want to be in that situation. So fix it before you do the upgrade. In terms of, requirements, I know people that are using, XP in smaller memory environments where RAM might be 128 meg versus even 256. When you throw more memory at it, which is not an expensive upgrade, it really helps the performance a great deal. Where Vista is going to be in that game or game plan, if you want to call it, I have not loaded it onto a system, so I cannot tell you if, sure it might work in 256, better in 512, but does it really need 2 gigabytes? That might be, the way to go. But it hasn't been really released in a large-scale environment, just in beta testing, and some people choose, like myself, to stay away from that after being involved in it for years and sometimes it not being fun because it might crash at the wrong time.
Right.
When you're like the first one doing something and they didn't plan on it. But it's not just the memory that is the specifications within the hardware that play a role. You have hard drive speeds that interface with your system board. You have video cards that interface with the system board that have memory and processors that all enhance the experience with the software. So, throwing more memory, to speed it up might help, but there are other, little bottlenecks that really can affect it. So if you have a system that's in the 3 to 5 year range, I believe the government still gives us this 5 year cycle of retiring, equipment. Realistically, 3 years is probably, closer to what it should be. So I would say you're going to have a much better experience if you upgrade, if you're in that 3 to 5 year, you know, hardware environment where you purchased and you've done all these little things to it. When Vista comes out and you want to take advantage of it, you know, moving your data over from the old system to the new system, cost-wise, it's not just the upgrade of the operating system that you're paying for, it's the cost of maybe some more hardware. And by the time you look at all those things, you may not be that far off from just getting a new system.
All right. Let's go to the phones and take some calls. We have two lines open. If you have a question that you would like Peter to advise you on, the number in Madison is 263-1890. Otherwise, it's toll-free at 800-642-1234. And we're going to start off with Joe in Oshkosh. Joe, what's on your mind today?
Hi. Well, I think I've got virus problems. This is kind of the first time, so I'm not sure. So I'll give you just a little background. I do have Norton antivirus on here, and it has caught viruses in the past, but one of them it didn't seem to have any effect on, which, you know, flashed on the screen saying that it wasn't able to get rid of it, was this one called WargBot. And anyway, so I just let it go because it really didn't seem like it was interfering with anything. Well, over the past 2 weeks or so, it's gotten worse to the point where, this is all internet stuff, and when I get on the internet, it doesn't, the pages don't show up, and it takes forever. I've got dial-up to begin with, and it takes forever to open a page when I am able to get to it. And let's see, what else can I tell you? I did find a location of it in my files where the thing was sitting and tried to go in and get rid of the file, but I wasn't able to do that. And that was like a week ago or so, and now I went in there today, and maybe it's just something I didn't notice before, but it seems like there's dozens of more. I can't find the name of the file, first of all, anymore, and in its place it seems like there's dozens of little icons that have popped up there, so I don't know if this is making any sense, but that's what's going on right now.
So you need some help trying to see if you can get your system back to your own versus
right.
somebody else's, which it seems like.
Right.
It's funny. I had this conversation yesterday with my son, and my son refused to admit that there might be something going on with his computer. And then he said, "Dad, you know, the browser doesn't work, and this one doesn't work, but I can still play my internet game, but my internet game is slow, and, you know, call the service provider, you know, really got to fix this." And I'm like, you know, I turn these things on, and you turn them off, and I have them on for a certain reason, but you seem to want to not, you know, adhere to or listen to the warnings or, you know, be preventative. So, number one, and we've talked about this for a long time, programs like Norton, McAfee, the bigger antivirus programs are typically targets. And if you have a problem, if you're a Norton or McAfee user and you have a problem, you need to deal with it right away. Because it's sort of like, propping open the door, and you've kind of let somebody in. They may have like a hand in, but that hand is somehow gaining strength and taking that door from you, and then it's opening up the floodgates. So when you think it's just one little thing going on in the back and you don't really have to deal with it, you really do, because what happens is you don't know. There are so many different spyware, malicious backdoor programs, Trojans, viruses, worms out there, that what their job is to propagate themselves, to repopulate and go out and conquer other systems
relentlessly.
You know, they don't know no, they just want to keep going. So what may happen is your system may be turning into a server for somebody else without you even knowing it, and your internet stuff starts getting busy, but yet you're not really doing much with it. Pages don't load because it's trying to take down your way of getting out to the outside world to seek out help, which might be getting another program on your system through the internet. It might be a scanner that you can turn on to try and help you get rid of it. And they're trying to slowly take these defenses down as well as build up, you know, what their need for their needs are. So what I told my son and friend was listening, and I said, what you need to do is download a couple of antivirus programs, maybe even do a scan. There is Zone Alarm, which is a firewall. You may have to tweak that for performance. But and also Microsoft Defender. Some of these programs will let you know if there are things going on where it's trying to make changes to your system. And the experience in using these programs helps you learn a little bit more about what you have in front of you and what is allowable and what is not allowable. So, for example, if you're doing some internet gaming, you're going to want to let that out. You're going to want to let, you know, the interaction with the gaming site out, but you're going to want to know what it is. And if someone's trying to throw you off and maybe caught on that you're using that, and maybe they change the lettering or something, you'll be tuned in to see if you need to, you know, block something. So if you on my infostar.com virus info center page, I've listed a number of links for AV help. And what you can do, and whether or not you can do this with your system still, or you do it with a friend's system and download those files and burn a CD and then disconnect your computer from the internet after you've gone out and gotten, make sure that they're current with the updates, is to download, you know, two or three of these free antivirus programs. There's AVG is one. I know they're changing January 15th to a newer version. Avast is another. ClamWin is a free internet project virus antivirus program. Bitdefender is another one. I have links to all those. There are other sites out there that will do remote scans on your system. You may have to use Internet Explorer because some of them use ActiveX controls to do that. And then Microsoft Defender. Or MS Defender, you can do a search on that. I've got links to that as well under spyware. You can download that. And all those programs, once you download them, you should also have them check for updates and then run the scans. And Zone Alarm, I have a link to that under the firewall section. You can download that. That's a software firewall. So, you know, if you want to see what's trying to come in or what's trying to get out, you're going to have to fine-tune your system so it can still, you know, perform well. Sometimes firewalls are a little tricky and slow things down because people end up blocking things that they really should be allowing to go out or also coming in. So you just have to be aware that firewalls can be a little tricky. But, you know, and the other issue you're going to be confronted with is because Norton has been compromised, Norton really has to be shut off when you're doing this because Norton is going to think that these other programs are attacking it. So you may have to go so far as to uninstall it. You might have to even bring it up in the safe mode, which is restarting your system. And when you see it says starting Windows, hit the F8 key and then pick number 3, which is start up in the safe mode, because if it's running, it's not going to like having these other programs, especially antivirus programs, being installed. And you're going to want to get those hooks out of there so that Norton is not really doing its own protection on the violators that are on your system. So in other words, it can almost act as a shield to you trying to get to the worm, the Trojan, or whatever program that's causing problems on your system. So you've got a little bit of work there to do.
You said infostar.com, and then what's the...
On the top left-hand side, you'll see a menu list, and it says Virus Info Center.
Okay.
And then in that page, or on that page, there's a grouping of links, and one section is AV Help, another one is Spyware, another one for XP users and firewalls. All those links are there.
Joe, good luck to you. Thanks very much for the call, and we were able to get in quite a bit about handling viruses. We'll be taking another call from Jan, Jim, and Kathy coming up in just a minute here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning, Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along with us. And if you'd like to join the conversation, the number in Madison is 263-1890. Otherwise, it's toll-free at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Jan next in Deerfield. Hi, Jan.
Good morning, Delafield. I've just had my second catastrophic windows crash in about 2.5 years. I'm really frustrated with it. I recovered fully, not quite fully the first time, and I think I'm going to be able to recover fully this time, but it's taking a week. It took more than a week last time, many hours on the phone, and in some cases you have to send money to these software manufacturers to get them to help you with their programs, and Microsoft is about the least communicative of all. My friends with Macs taunt me regularly, and I'm just about, and maybe I am at the point where saying I am through with Billy Gates and going to Mac, and I wonder what you think about the Macs.
Well, the new Macs are actually running on Intel processors, and you can run Windows if you want to. You know, it depends on... I know at work I have a need for a Mac. The high-end graphics publishing aspects of the Mac are better than Windows in terms of memory management. I don't know if Vista is going to change that. I don't know if I have the patience to see if it's going to change that, but I probably will try it. But in terms of performance, you know, the Mac has the same capability, if not better, than the Windows environment in terms of dealing with, you know, being spammed and phished and virused by the outside world. It's not to say that there are going to be more attacks in the future, but at this point in time, you know, those kind of issues are clearly in the Mac's favor. Cost-wise, you'll probably invest more money into a Mac system. It's just a more of a pricey platform. But performance-wise, it depends on what you're going to do. Like I said, with the graphics and publishing world, the predominant choice is the Mac platform. Choices of software. If you run the Windows platform, you'll have access to the Windows program choices on the Mac system as well. So you can have both your cake and ice cream. And your
technical support is supposedly better with a Mac than it is.
I haven't experienced much technical support on the Mac platform. And one of my few calls to Windows, they admitted to causing the problem, so they handled it for free and put me right through to, you know, a person in their support team that could fix it because it was a server-related issue. But I do talk to a lot of people that are very frustrated or have had to pay and get no results at all, you know, both from not just from Windows, but from other support companies that, your problem, you know, needs to be escalated. Would you like to pay the extra fee to talk to somebody? And then you talk to that person, and it's like, I just wasted my money.
Yeah.
Are they notably more resistant to crashing then?
You know, if Larry were here, he'd, you know, I know Larry uses Macs quite a bit, and he also has Windows.
His Mac at home.
He's Mac at home, but he also has
Windows
system.
In the office.
He's got both in both environments.
He tells me he loves the Mac.
Yeah, and it's, you know, what you may want to do is test drive it a couple of times. You know, go to, I know their CompUSA has Macs, has a Macintosh section. I don't know what other stores do, but, you know, there's Mac, depending upon where you're living, Apple has its own store, you know, to just, you know, test drive it and see how Windows, if you still need Windows programs, you know, you can test drive it and see how, how it performs for you.
I'm perfectly willing to throw out all the Windows stuff and start over with Mac because I'm practically doing that now anyway.
Now what crashed on your system? Was it a hardware crash? Was it hard drive crashing?
Well, that's a good question. It started out with something very simple. I have a DVD burner. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of graphic stuff.
Okay.
And the burner simply wouldn't respond to either of the two programs that work with it. Took it into the manufacturer, who said there's nothing wrong with the burner. It's something in your software, probably one of the two programs. I called the manufacturer of that program. They said, well, uninstall it and reinstall it, which I did, at which point I discovered that I had all kinds of data corrupted. Called them back, and they said, well, your problem is with Windows, not with our software. You're going to have to reload Windows. And that's when I discovered that I had lost a great deal of my data.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've got all of it back after literally 6 hours on the phone with tech supports. And I'm now in the process of reloading all the software, and I'm going to make sure it's running before I put my data back on it. But this, this is the second time in 2.5 years, and it takes a week to get through this, and I'm tired of doing that.
Well, I can tell you a number of things. Number one is you have to look at computers as appliances. You know, they're mechanical and they can have problems, hardware and software. Number two is in a Windows system, you typically have multiple manufacturers. Apple is kind of, but not completely, closed the door on that. So, you know, your support issues will be more focused towards Apple and, you know, helping you to see through a potential problem, you know, with the solution. With Windows, you typically have, well, it's not me, it must be them.
Blame game.
And, you know, the blame game. And that can get really frustrating. And, you know, the more work in a Windows environment, I feel that you can do on troubleshooting on your own, especially with the power of the internet and the web and support groups that are out there. But, you know, that blame game is very popular in the Windows environment. And like I said, the Apple is more of a closed system, and you'll have less people to communicate with to try and get your answers.
The problem with users groups is, number one, again, it takes time. It
right.
takes an understanding of what the problem really is, which I often don't have. And I've often encountered dead ends. Somebody mm-hmm. says, here's what you do, and then they give something where you go into the code and reprogram
right.
it. I'm not going to do that.
A couple other things. One is on the Infostar.com Virus Info Center page, on the very top I have links to a wide variety of forums. And some of them are very hardcore hardware, platform, software related, where you can, you know, put out questions as related to, you know, Mac versus PC and with whatever you're doing out there, whether it's you or other people who are listening in. Also, I know Apple has got a link on their website about switching over from, you know, a PC to a Mac system. And then the other thing that I heard in what you brought up was having corrupt data files. And, you know, the requirement for doing backups, you know, whether or not you use these little external memory sticks that have 1 or 2 gigabytes to back up your data, or you're using a second hard drive or an external hard drive or a DVD, is making sure you do your backups on a regular basis. And a lot of people would be surprised to find out that, you know, if they need to back up, let's say, their personal accounting system, it doesn't really take up a lot of space, you know, in terms of using these little memory sticks. And if you're not doing any kind of backup, I would highly recommend at least getting one of those and, you know, looking, see how much data you have on your system that you really want to back up. So if you need to go to a new system or your system crashes and you need to recover, at least you've got something, because, you know, to risk all, to lose everything, is not just a week's worth of time to rebuild. For some people, it could take a lot longer. So hopefully, you know, people who are listening in, you know, doing backups is a very critical thing while using your system.
Jan, thank you very much for your call. Good luck to you in your search for Utopia. And let's go to Jim next in Green Bay. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Hi. Hey, you guys are outstanding, but I don't understand everything you're saying. What I'm looking for, and I'm not too good with the computer business, but my kids want me to get a computer. They said life would be a lot easier and wouldn't have to keep running to the library all the time.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm looking for is something that's cheap. I'm looking for somewhere I have access to, like to the library, government documents, maybe the Library of Congress, gardening, agriculture.
All you need is the internet.
Oh, that's all I need? So do I have to pay for how much? I mean, what do they usually charge for the internet?
Where are you located?
In Brown County.
In Brown County.
In the city of Green Bay?
Mm-mm. South of South.
Okay.
Okay. What you should do is probably in the newspaper or, you know, a local magazine, you'll probably have ads in there that talk about internet access. And what you want to find out, you might see a wide variety of services offered. You need to check and see what kind of service you can get where you live. So in other words, you need to find out, is your access just going to be dial-in, which is using a modem? Or do you have cable TV where you are?
We do, but I don't use it. I don't have it myself.
Okay.
But it is available?
Yeah.
But the hookup is available. Okay. You don't have to get cable TV, but you could probably still get your cable internet hookup, which would give you basically the internet being on all the time so that whenever you turn on your computer and go out to the internet, you're going to have quick access to it. And they usually have a different levels of service. So it might be their entry level might be $20 a month. They may have another level that's $30 a month and another level that's $40 a month or even $50. It just depends on the area and the service providers. And then also check with your phone company. Your phone company might also have what's called DSL service, which is another broadband or high-speed internet plan, and they may have a number of different levels as well. They might bundle it with your phone service too. And the cable company may even offer bundling your phone with your cable and your internet. So you might have a number of different options to choose from. The key difference to realize is whether or not it's modem versus DSL / broadband / cable is that those last three are on all the time as long as your devices are on, versus dial-in, which is you have to be proactive and say, I want to get onto the internet, and you're going to dial out to it, and it's going to be generally be a lot slower. How much slower? At a minimum, 20, maybe 40, 50 times slower, which is pretty significant with what companies out there are trying to push to you, the information they're trying to get to you.
Slow is good. I'm slow myself. another question is, I'm not going to get stuck with all this diseases that this thing has, like all these things coming in and crashing and burning and chicken pox and bugs and everything.
Yeah, the virus and worms and so forth. Well, you need to make sure that your system is set up so that you are protected from those things. And like the previous caller in talking about a Macintosh system or Macintosh solution, is they typically get, they do not get solicited by these worms and viruses that are out there versus the Windows environment. Cost-wise, the system's going to probably be more expensive. So you have to kind of weigh, you know, the cost dollar-wise versus maybe you might have to do a little bit more work on your end to protect your system. What should you be looking to pay for a system? Boy, there are a lot of, if you want to call them deals, where they have instant savings or rebate savings, systems that are in the $300 range to, you know, $500 or $600, including a monitor, some including a printer, so a complete system, and you can be doing, you know, all the things that you talked about.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, Jim, good luck to you. Consumer Reports presents an annual issue where they look at a lot of systems and give you some evaluation of how they perform. That would be one source you might look at there while you're at the library.
Yep.
Kathy, let's go to Edgerton next. Hi, Kathy.
Good morning.
Hi.
I just have a question, and I can take my answer off the air. Where do you or can you recycle old systems? Like, we have a couple in our basement that, you know, where do you get rid of them at?
There's
a Dane County
Yeah,
recycling.
No, where are you? Are you
Edgerton.
In Edgerton?
We're in Rock County.
Okay. I know there are a couple of companies that do the recycling.
Right.
Cascade, I think, might
be
one.
I think it is. Cascade Industries, I think.
Yeah. That's one. Madison, boy, I wonder if Madison Recycle has links on their site for that stuff.
If you go to City of Madison and look under streets or recycling, you should get an indication there of when they do their recycling and whether you're eligible. I don't know if a Rock County person can come to Dane County and dispose.
But she probably has a friend.
If you knew somebody in Dane County, yeah. Well, then that probably would solve that question.
Thank you very much.
All right, Kathy, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Our guest today is Peter Green of InfoStar. He is Madison's personal computer consultant and has advice for personal computer users. If you'd like to get into the program, the number in Madison is 263-1890. Otherwise, it's toll-free at 800-642-1234. Steve Williams is our on-air phone producer today. Let's go to Wendy next in Eau Claire. Hi, Wendy.
Hi, I just have a quick question, and I will take it up my answer off the air. I just recently downloaded Mozilla as my browser, and for the reason that Internet Explorer was somehow, certain sites, and especially my blog, I wasn't able to access certain features from my blog, so I started using Mozilla, and I really like it a lot, but I never really investigated it too much, so I was just wondering what your guest opinion on was of the browser and other free browsers that are out there, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, that's a really good question. You need to still have Internet Explorer on your system to interact with Microsoft's website for keeping your operating system up to date. The Firefox, Mozilla, and some of the other browsers like Opera will not interact with Microsoft's website to keep those parts of your system up to date. So. And it'll tell you that when you go to visit their site for trying to get an update, it says, we don't support your browser, and, come back with Internet Explorer. Feature-wise, Internet Explorer 7 has added some new features which have caught up to the competition, namely tab browsing, which a lot of people like, the ability to have multiple home pages in tabs, mm-hmm. and then saving that configuration, and then anytime you start them up, you get access to all those different home pages right away. Internet Explorer did not have that for a very long time. Opera has been very popular as in terms of having a lot of these features, but not a lot of users. So. The Firefox, Mozilla, Opera programs, and there are a few others. I have access to links on my InfoStar Virus Info Center page under browsers to give you easy access to downloading all the different browsers that are out there. It's always good to have a couple of browsers on your system just to see if you're having a problem with one, whether or not you're having the same problem in another. So having more than just Internet Explorer on your system is a highly recommended thing to do, and Firefox, Mozilla is probably the next most popular browser out there, has a lot of great features, and you're not going to be disappointed in using that as your primary browser.
Good luck, and let's go next to Dick in Muskego. Hi, Dick.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. Recently, in the last few months, I had from AOL that they wanted to update my software, and I had to restart my computer and then install the software, and, it was just supposedly an updating thing. I've done that 2-3 times, and it continues to pop up on me probably, once out of every 2 times I go online. I had approached AOL. They told me to go through Fixit. And I tried that, and it still doesn't work. If you have any ideas.
So have you seen any error messages during the installation?
No. Nope. It it goes through, and I restart it, and everything seems fine.
Which operating system are you using?
AOL.
But I mean, are you using
Windows? Windows.
Which version of Windows?
XP.
XP? Hmm. I was kind of hoping you'd say an earlier version, because then maybe that might make sense why it wasn't. So it keeps bugging you every 2-3 times to keep going through the update.
Right. You know, restart it, mm-hmm. and go back to the restart thing. And I've done it 2-3 times.
Now, does it look like it's done the update?
It's hard to tell. It seems like it does, you know. It seems like it's going through the whole process.
Right.
You know? I mean, it goes through the restart, et cetera, and then...
Right. What I would do is, you know, in AOL's, web environment, check and see, the version that you have on your system and see if, in fact, it has installed. It may be going through all these different things and actually not getting to the final part, and for some reason it's not communicating with you that it's actually not finished.
Because I did the fix-it thing, you know, uh-huh. and then they kicked off all my phone numbers to get online. I still got a dial-up, so then I had to reinstall all those. You know, so it's just like that didn't work either, you know, and that was directly from them. So I haven't gotten back to them yet. But.
You know what? I'm just trying to think. Too bad. I don't know if you had this before, but do you have the restore feature on your system turned on? Do you know what that is?
No, not really.
If you click on Start and then click on Accessories and then click on System Tools, there's within System Tools, there's a feature called System Restore.
Okay.
And anytime that you are, you know, making a change to software, doing an upgrade, sometimes the software that you're doing this with may create this restore point. I usually recommend to creating your own restore point, not trusting that the software is going to do it. So in other words, you're kind of taking a snapshot of your system in its working condition so that if there's a problem with an update, you can always go back to the way it was before when you try to do that install or update. So if you click on the system restore, you'll see where it says create a restore point. You can put in your name, today's date, and a comment before doing latest AOL, update, and then, create that restore point. What that means is that if there's a problem with any of the upgrading or the software installation, you can always go back to the System Tools System Restore and restore back to that point where you knew it was working well. It comes in handy when you do things where you're messing around with adding a new browser, some kind of internet tool, and for some reason they mess around with your settings, and then you want to go back to the way it was before. It's very easy to do that.
Okay.
The other thing is, if this is a little tip for everyone out there with XP system, in that system restore, so you click on Start, click on Accessories, System Tools, and then System Restore. You'll see a line in there that says System Restore Settings, and if you click on that, you should resize that from the 12% to probably 1 or 2% on your system, because what Windows is doing is allocating all this hard drive space to just System Restore, and in most cases, you do not need 12% being taken away from your hard drive space.
Dick, thanks very much. Good luck to you, and... we'll be talking with Kathy, Nancy, and Johnny in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. I'm Jim Packard, in for Larry Mueller. Our guest today, Peter Green of InfoStar, Madison Personal Computer Consultant. Jim Packard, in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you with us today as we talk about personal computing. Our guest is Peter Green. If you'd like to join the conversation, the number in Madison is 263-1890 or toll-free at 800-642-1234. Let's go to the phones, to Johnny in Green Bay. Hi, Johnny.
Hi, Jim and Peter.
Hi.
I'm calling to participate in the whole Mac PC debate, and not really to debate. I've been using Mac since 1987, but in my household now we have 5 computers, 3 Macs and 2 Microsoft products, and I've become the designated IT person of the household. And what I'm finding is that in all my years of using a Mac, I've never had a virus. But I'm always dealing with those kind of problems with the PCs in our household. But I did want to make a comment. You had a caller, and you were talking to him about running the new Intel Macs on which you can put Microsoft programs. And I do not have that computer yet, but when I go to my Mac users group, what I am told there is that if you do decide to run Microsoft products on the new the Intel Macs, that you will be opening yourself up to the same viruses that you currently are open to on a Microsoft operating system running on, you know, a non-Mac product.
Yeah,
so I just wanted to comment on that.
Yeah, I didn't think that part was going to go away.
Yeah, unfortunately not. But
right.
I think that the only detriment to having a Mac is, as you said, the purchase price is a bit higher, and just the lack of community support, not so much the Mac people themselves, but you just don't have that huge community of users around you that are familiar with the product.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I needed to say.
I have a question for you. How do you feel about, you know, in terms of getting answers to questions, though, and the gentleman that called in and, you know, the blame game was being passed around. How do you feel about that within the Apple environment?
I think that it's a lot easier in the Apple environment because, as you said, you have fewer people to go to for answers.
Right.
I was trying to get my daughter's Dell set up for my husband to use and reinstalling a lot of things so that he could use it, and I got a lot of runaround in terms of who I should be going to for answers, and that was a new experience for me.
Yeah,
I have not had that with the Mac.
Yeah, I think in the PC environment, not in the Mac environment, there's a lot of, you know, disconnect with the support within even the same companies. And that can be very frustrating to end users.
I think, too, just because the Mac is such a small percentage of the market, we kind of have an underdog attitude of us against the world. We really want to help each other. And I think, although that sounds kind of silly, I think it does play a big part in attitude.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly does, and the converse is true then, Peter, when you try to deal with Microsoft or other companies that provide sort of the same kinds of services. Johnny, thank you so much for your observations, and appreciate hearing from you.
Yep.
Kathy in Madison is next. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, good morning,
Hi.
Guys.
Mm-hmm.
I'm having a problem with my Outlook Express. When I am about to use it, well, first of all, when I get my desktop and things are starting to run, I get a download from either my virus scan or the privacy portion of it, and I have McAfee. And then while I go to Outlook Express, something is wrong with my messages. I have that little triangle in the lower right-hand corner. So what I end up having to do is go to Tools, Accounts, go through that mess, and I find out that it's changed my incoming mail from a pop.charter.net to a 127.0.1.0. Then I have to change it back to the pop.charter.net, and then it works just fine. What do I do to stop that? At least I know how to, you know, what to do when I'm doing it, but what do I do to eliminate this completely?
It sounds like you said you have McAfee on your system for antivirus,
right?
I've had problems with Outlook Express like that on systems, and when I see that, there's usually some suspect program, whether it's a backdoor program or a Trojan or something that's trying to take control of your Outlook Express, or, you know, trying to cut it off, and it's changing those settings so that you can no longer use it. So it's trying to frustrate you as the user.
Oh, you bet.
Yeah. So what I would probably do is use an outside scan, or maybe download another antivirus program on your system and see if it finds anything, or maybe even a spyware program. Do you have any protection for that as well?
Yes, I do have spyware. I bought a bundle about 6 months or so ago.
Do you keep it up to date?
It's still within, well, my virus isn't, but okay. My others are because it was in a new bundle.
So do you keep the McAfee up to date?
No.
Yeah, you see, that's part of the problem, too. You need to keep that up to date on a regular basis. And what does that word regular basis mean? To me, it used to mean at least once a day. That's at a minimum. Sometimes if you're feeling not lucky, you might want to, you know, check for updates in the afternoon if you're on in the morning, you know, just to make sure that you have protection from anything that's out there that's come since the last update that you've done.
Well, I have the automatic updates.
Okay. Are you sure that those are actually getting done?
I'm not sure.
Do you witness it?
I see the icon moving.
Okay.
The arrow.
Well, okay. Usually when you get an automatic update, and if your system, let's say you do an automatic update for 8 o'clock in the morning, and your system is shut off at 8 o'clock, and you come in and you turn on your system and it's 8:30, it should still go through and check for those updates, and you should see some kind of interaction with their service that either there are no updates or it's completed and your system is update and current.
Well, so, you know, it's funny, when I shut down, it won't shut down right away. It'll have to wait for the updates to be to be installed, I believe it says.
Okay. So you should just make sure that you're either witnessing that or you've looked and saw a notification that you've gone through your updates. On the virus info, in the InfoStar Virus Info Center page, there are a couple of outside scans that you could do. There's a Bitdefender scan, Panda scan. There are a number of scans that you can do from other websites just to take a look at your system, and they'll scan through and see if they find any suspect files.
AVG on my system, and for reasons I can't remember, I removed it.
Okay.
Would it be wise to put that back on?
You can put it back on. I've had pretty good luck with it running concurrently with McAfee. Norton seems to be the one that I've had problems where, you know, if you run two on Norton, Norton likes to be the only player in the game. The other thing is a good resource to help you with Outlook Express is called InsideOE.com. And you might want to take a look at their website, and, you know, I don't think it would give you, it might not have any answers for what you're talking about because it might be related to a specific, you know, malicious program that's just playing games with your settings on a regular basis.
Yeah, so it's either, if I were to not do anything and just change the settings back every time I turn it on, what would be the worst case scenario?
Well, it depends. If there is a malicious program that's trying to do something to your system and that's all that it's trying to do, then you're kind of at the end of the game. But if there are other things it's got in store for you based on a timing parameter that's been set, in other words, it's been resident on your system and it's been there for 60 days or 90 days or whatever it deems, you know, the time has come, I'm going to show you what else I can do. That's why people need to be proactive on these things.
Okay. Well, thank you for your help.
All right, Kathy, good luck to you. Thanks very much for your call. Appreciate hearing from you as we talk today with Peter Green of InfoStar. Let's go to Nancy of East Troy next. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. I have a PC, and I do have Norton antivirus. And when I'm in Inbox Outlook Express, I am getting people's names coming up on my InMail. And I don't know who they are, and I just go in and I go to my, message, and I block them, and they say okay, and I okay it. And then the next time I go on, there's somebody else's name on there that's nothing to do with my, that I know. I never open anything that's not from somebody that I know.
Yeah, it sounds like you're getting a lot of spam.
Yeah, how do I get rid of that?
That's the new twist on spam that's been going on for the last few months where they're using these first names and doing that. And they're originating from different emails. So you can block one, but it won't be blocking, you know, the future ones. You know, filtering you know, trying to look and see if you can, you know, add to your filtering with Outlook Express the content of the message. So whether or not you can block something with this, what's in the subject line or in the body of the message, and then okay. put that into like a junk mailbox.
Oh, all right. Like, yep. I've got one now. It's a smart Martissa. Mm-hmm. Next, happy new Martissa, whatever that is. I have no idea what that is. Well, yeah. I would just click on it, and then I would go to message, and I'd block it normally and get it rid of it. But now tomorrow or later on today, if I went in, I'd have two or three other different
ones. Yeah, blocking message is only good if you know that it's from a consistent sender. That's the problem in your case. So it's more blocking the content that is going to work, and that's in the filters within Outlook Express.
Good luck to you, Nancy. Appreciate hearing from you. Our guest today is Peter Green of InfoStar, Madison Personal Computer Consultant, and he's got advice for personal computer users. We'll take more of your calls after we check the latest news here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hello, I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you with us today as we talk about personal computing with Peter Green of InfoStar, Madison Personal Computer Consultant. Peter's been with Larry for, what, about 15 years or more now?
Longer
than that.
Start in 85 with Carol, and that was when he took a sabbatical to Trinidad. And
Carol Cowan came in and did shows for him, and started with her.
We were talking about MS-DOS and IBM XTs and ATs and no Windows.
Well, one of the things that's been consistent with your appearances is your top 10 websites of the month. And you can go to infostar.com, and you can look at the archives of the top 10. And eventually, you'll be able to see this month's top 10.
Yeah, it was an interesting experience. I updated the web pages, and yet what shows up in the browser is not updated. So I get a little technical issue I have to confront my web host with to find out what's going on, because I know the pages made it there, but they're just not magically
not
appearing.
So when I go there, I'm getting the
right.
top 10 as of December 4th,
and
what we're looking for is January 4th.
That's January 2nd.
So let's run through them
okay,
for the month.
The first one I put up, and it's actually one of like maybe two or three that I can remember that are not really like a .com page, but it's Microsoft's page on Windows Vista. So it's their web resource to launch and support their new operating system. And it's actually Microsoft.com/Windows Vista, all one word, /, and that'll get you to their resource on that. Number two is about information on ads and advertisers for the NFL Super Bowl event that's coming up. It's also a media event with this superbowl-ads.com, ads.com. The next one is the official website. We're technically in the ski snowboarding season here, Jim. I don't
maybe you know, in Colorado.
Yeah, definitely in Colorado. But if you go to usskiteam.com, that's their official website. And, you know, we don't have the Winter Olympics now, but they definitely have a lot going on with the team. Here's a resource about cell phone and wireless service plans. And, boy, I'll tell you, if you're looking at a new cell phone today, a lot of choices, a lot of things is related to, internet/web data, fees is related to that, 'cause it's just not in, you know, voice anymore. But it's wirelessguide.org. If you go to the .com, it's not the same site, so you have to go to the wirelessguide.org. Mm-hmm. Number five is a vast global news and information resource, and a very impressive website. I even put up their link to their sitemap, and it's called WN.com, and it stands for World News Network. So it's a global news resource. The next one is a great source for tech news, reviews, and more is on wireless networking industry, and it's hosted by a very large technology resource as well, and it's called Y-Fi+. Planet, wi-fiplanet.com. This next one, I think I might have heard this mentioned on an NPR or one of the shows that you guys have had, but it's the Organic Materials Review Institute, and it's omri.org, and it's really for organic certified. It provides organic certifiers, growers, manufacturers, and suppliers an independent review of products that are intended for use in certified organic production.
Did you say OMRI?
OMRI.org. And tax season's coming up. You know, end of the calendar year, beginning of a new one. Got issues to deal with that. And there's a place called taxpolicycenter.org. And it's a center that is comprised of nationally recognized experts in tax budgeting and social policies that have served in government. So that's a good resource to know about. And this next one, it's unfortunate, but it's a growing segment of taxpayers, and people don't even realize that they're encroaching upon it, because as you get these pay raises, what happens is you get into this tax category that's called the alternative minimum tax. And it keeps growing and growing every year. And this website is called amtadvisor.com. And the best way to deal with it is to know if you're encroaching upon it and planning ahead. So knowing December of 2007 that you may be there is not going to help you. You need to look at it and evaluate it before you get there so you can plan ahead and see if you can miss out on it. And number 10 is, if you're looking for reading material, this is the place to go. I can't say that it's like great reading material, but if you really need reading material, it's the Congressional Budget Office. It's cbo.gov, and boy, have they got volumes of reading material. So you can learn all about the government budgeting process, and they have documents and studies and reports more than you can ever imagine.
And that's the top 10 for January. And speaking of the alternative minimum tax, it reminds me that our CPA tax advisor, Steve Schmidt, will be with us on the 30th of January. If you'd like to enter that in your Palm Pilot or mark it on your calendar,
ask him about that for me?
Well, we have talked about that. I mean, it comes
but
up
I
now
mean,
each year.
You know, any changes that he foresees? I mean, every year they try to increase the pot, and the government talks about how they're maybe going to do something, but it's such a great way for them to bring in the extra money to fund the things that they need to be doing that, you know, you kind of wonder if they're ever really going to change it.
All right, let's go to the phones, and the number in Madison is 263-1890. Otherwise, it's toll-free at 800-642-1234. Lines are full, people waiting patiently, including Rick in La Crosse. Hi,
good
Rick.
Good morning.
Yes.
Happy New Year.
Thank you, too.
Both. I just wanted to give you an update, Peter. First of all, the Mozilla Firefox is the best browser out there, coupled with Thunderbird email client, excellent spam filter. Second of all, you can be independent of Internet Explorer. There is now an extension, Mozilla's famous for extensions, that allows you to contact the update site, Microsoft update site, and update through that. It's called WinDiz Update. WINDIZ update, and you can find it in the extensions in Mozilla.com, the site, the add-ons, Mozilla add-ons at Mozilla.com. So yes, you can say bye-bye to Internet Explorer.
That's good to know. Too bad it's not turned on right away. I don't understand why they wouldn't have, you know, like when they expand it and install on your system, that it's actually not something that is just done, and
probably will be in future versions, I'm sure.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Thanks very much. Appreciate the information, Rick. We long for the company of people who can provide advice like that and usually get it during these shows.
Yep.
Let's go to David next in Duluth. David, how are you today?
Very good. Thank you.
Good.
Great show.
Thank you.
I'm relatively new at this, and so my terminology may not be quite up to snuff. Bear with me, please. I'm running Windows XP media center. For Christmas, I was given Adobe Photoshop. My installation seemed to be going well. And now all of a sudden I'm getting error messages saying, couldn't launch browser. Please ensure your browser is properly configured and try again. Browser properly configured crosses my line between what I know and where I'm totally lost.
Interesting. So you installed Adobe Photoshop, and then when you tried to get access to the internet / web, your web browser is not working?
Well, I get to the welcome screen mm-hmm. on the Photoshop.
Okay.
And then when I try to access their tutorials mm-hmm. and videos, then that's when it goes over to this properly configured command.
Okay. It sounds to me like there's a problem with their setup on your system, and I don't know if it would be best that you actually probably contact Adobe and tell them what your error message is,
okay.
because if it's a result of their installation on your system, they probably should have a fix for it. Because
oh.
you would hope that you're not the first one to experience what you're going through.
Yes.
But that's what it sounds like to me, is that they're trying to sync up with some pages that they're not properly configured for, and they may have an update that will correct that. They may say you need to go to our website and download the patch for the program that you have.
Oh, okay.
So it may... You could try doing that, you know, on your own, is going to the Adobe website and then looking under possibly support and then picking the product that you have and then downloads. And as long as you're, you know, licensed for it, you'll be able to download their patches or fixes.
I am licensed according
yeah.
to their screens.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'd actually, you might want to try and do that and see if that actually fixes the problem.
If that doesn't fail, then am I looking for some outside consultant to come
in? No, I would contact Adobe. So one of the things with buying things off the shelf and even downloading programs that you've purchased is that you still usually need to go and get updates, because they put that product on the shelf and that product may be sitting out there for 1 week, 1 month, 3 months, 6 months. It's almost like checking for a loaf of bread, whether or not you're buying a loaf of bread that they shouldn't sell after today or tomorrow or, you know, in 10 days because it just got delivered by the baker. So what I'm saying is the inventory on the store's shelves that, you know, people are buying is not always up to date. And there might be this change that they inadvertently made, some tech person made and didn't realize that it actually affected, you know, the program reference links that you have. So.
All right. I'll give
okay.
that a try.
All right,
yep,
David.
Good luck.
Thanks very much. And something that we found out during the news was that the Department of Corrections recycles computer systems. You just take your old computer to your nearest prison.
Wow.
And
that's a great thing.
It is. Because
yeah.
before we had one or two sites in the state that I was aware of, and now with the way Wisconsin builds prisons, there's lots of opportunities.
That's great.
So thanks very much for that call, David. Let's go to John next in Waukesha. Hi, John.
Hi. Hi, Peter.
Hi.
Listen, I've listened to you before, and I really enjoy the things you say, and I found them very helpful. And now here's the problem I'm having currently. I run Windows XP Home Edition, and I use Microsoft Outlook for my email. And in just the last couple of weeks, I've noticed that if I receive email from known sources that I'm permitting, that I want to come in, if I try to click on the link to respond to either an ad or to some other information, I click on the link and it will not open up for me. So I'm not sure what's happened here, and Do you have any idea?
Yeah, there's actually a setting in Outlook to turn that on or off. And I know I've seen it where updates have actually, you know, caused that feature to stop working. Where it is, you're going to have to pry within Outlook to see, you know, where how to enable the links within your emails. But there is an actual setting to do that.
So you don't think it would be in Tools for Outlook? It might be somewhere else?
It would be in the Outlook system. It wouldn't be in your browser.
Okay, so yep. It would be... Yeah, I mean...
It might be under Tools, Options, and somewhere embedded within a tab.
And what kind of verbiage would I be looking for where it says allow links or whatever? I mean, is there some kind of verbiage that, well, I will recognize?
Anything with HTTP or HTML or viewing web pages?
Okay.
You know, that along those lines.
Okay, so...
Yep.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
There's also a couple of resources that might help you, too. One is tomsterdam.com. Tomster, TOMSTERDAM.com. I believe that's an Outlook resource. And there's a website called MVPS.org.
MVPS.org,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's for Microsoft Most Valuable Professionals.
Okay.
And there's actually a link to it on the InfoStar Virus Info Center page. I believe it's under, I think it might be under top under guides, but... what that is they have a big list of the people that specialize in all the different areas.
Okay.
So look for the big list and then look for Outlook.
Great. All right, I'll try that. And thanks so much for the information. I'm sure it will help me greatly.
Yep.
All right,
you're
John. Thank you very much. We appreciate hearing from you. And the number in Madison is 263-1890, otherwise toll free at 800-642-1234. A few minutes left to go in the show, so let's go to William in Green Bay. Hi, William.
Yeah, I had a quick couple of comments. I've been keeping my computer. I have a D key drive and a D partition where I keep all of my data, and then I'll keep Norton Ghost to keep all of the key drive. So if I have to recover, I can just recover it with Norton Ghost and back everything up that way.
Right.
And then I have a custom system, but if I went to a non-custom system, like, say, a Macintosh, because as a PC user, you know, I'm not a big Mac user, but I'm beginning to love my iPod. is there a way to do something like that on the Macintosh?
To have different partitions?
Yeah, and back it up, you know, keep something like Norton Ghost to keep it, you know, to keep your operating system and your data, you know, and keep basically keeping your operating system and your data separate.
Right. Well, that's good that you have it organized that way, because it does make it easier to move things from one system to another.
Yeah.
I don't know of the specific, you know, programs that are out there in terms of, you know, for backups for a Mac system, but, and also for ghosting. And partitioning, but they're out there. That kind of stuff is not new to, or not just for the PC world. Unix uses that a lot as well. And spanning drives, you know, where you have multiple hard drives and then they all look like one large drive, is also not unusual. So there are a lot of options out there for you to.
I just thought of one other thing while I was waiting. I've gotten a number of spams lately that are pictures of text.
Okay.
What's that? Is that to get by filters or something?
Yeah, that's another trick to just try and get through. And okay. Yeah, it's kind of a pain.
Yeah, thank you very much.
All right, thank you very much, William. And let's go to Marie in La Crosse next. Hi, Marie. All right, let's try this. Hi, Marie.
Hi.
Yes.
Is this better?
Yes.
Okay, thanks for taking my call. I have a Dell computer, and it has crashed, and I was on the line with Dell and did get it restored. However, I have lost everything. What I'm looking for is some company or some place that I can go to who will help me possibly regain some of that information and data back, if you know of any in this area.
Okay. Now, they brought your system back up?
Yes.
Okay. What did they have you do? Did they have you use their Restore CD and, you know, bring the system back online like it was from the factory?
Yes.
Yeah, see that there's probably not a very good chance for recovering stuff on that system. The more that it gets used, the more likely things are getting written over. There are some tools that I've tried to use where you try to recover stuff on a system that has had the drive reformatted, but I've had limited success with that. And it can also get pretty pricey where you send the drive out and have somebody look at it.
Right.
I don't know what else to tell you. You can, I've tried working on systems like that, and it can be very frustrating. You just kind of wait and see if there's anything you can get off of it, and in most cases it's been changed to the point where you can't.
You can't. Okay.
Yeah.
The other question I had is, you had indicated a website for cell phones and so forth, and I believe you said something about wireless.org.
Right. Wirelessguide.org is for, right.
Okay, wireless guide.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
.org.
Okay, guide.org. Okay. Any information you can give me on antivirus programs that may be better than what I have, which is McAfee?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Some of the more popular free programs that are out there, AVG is one. Another one is Avast. Excuse me, I've used ClamWin, which is a free antivirus, and it's like an internet project where multiple people contribute to it. Bitdefender is another. I've got links to those on the Virus Info Center page, so you don't have to look for where their home pages are or their special download links are. Some of them require that you register, and some of them don't.
Okay, and what is that website again?
So it's infostar.com.
Infostar.
InfoStar.com.
Okay.
And then on the left side, you'll see it says Virus Info Center.
Okay,
and
great.
Click on that.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you very much. And on that website, you'll find the show schedules, top 10 archives, current top 10 websites as revealed at the top of the hour. Tech links, information at the Virus Info Center.
Tips page, which has got buyer's guides on it. And
it's a great resource. And Peter, again, we'll look forward to seeing you in a month. You'll be back on the 5th of February.
After the Super Bowl.
That's right. And coming up tomorrow, Scott Craven and Wisconsin Wildlife will be talking about that until noon, and then provide you with live coverage of Governor Jim Doyle's inauguration ceremonies from the State Capitol Rotunda. That's coming up tomorrow, starting at 11. And if you need some advice, you can always email Peter, web1@infostar.com. We'll land on his desk. I'm Jim Packard. Thanks for listening. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.